All right, as you know, we are at Exodus 20, and so we are about to begin looking at the Ten Commandments. And you weren't here last week. We spent our entire time just emphasizing that we are no longer under this particular law, and so that's important, of course, for us to understand. Of course, it is review for most of us because we all, I think, understand that the old law has been nailed to the cross, abolished, Paul says in one place, taken out of the way. The Hebrews writer says that it's become obsolete. And so we realize we can't go to the Old Testament for authority. It does not mean we don't believe in the Old Testament. We do completely and fully. All Scripture is given by the inspiration of God, and we realize that. And so, but we also realize we're not under this particular law. And we emphasized that this law is really the law of the Old Testament, the law of Moses in its totality, not just the Ten Commandments. There is no difference between the law of Moses and the law of God, and we looked at some passages about that last week. So we have got that out of the way. Now, we started at the end of class to look at the Ten Commandments. We made a few introductory remarks. Remember, the Ten Commandments are divided in two. The first portion has to do with our responsibility, man's responsibility towards God. And then the second has to do with man's responsibility towards man. And so it's nicely divided like that. Even Jesus recognized that when he was asked the greatest command. He said the first one is to do what? To love who? To love God. That would handle the duties and encompass the duties that we have with regard to God. What was the second great commandment? Right, to love others, our neighbor as ourself. And so Jesus even recognized the two parts of God's command. And so everybody, there's no real problem with that. There's not too much problem with any of this. There are differences of opinion with regard to the divisions and which falls under what category. The Jewish divisions of it, they had the first five commandments on the first tablet, and then laws 6 through 10 on the second, which is interesting. So they had the fifth commandment, they had as a part of man's duties towards God, which gives you a little insight to the Jewish thinking and how important they believe that children obeying their parents is, honoring their parents, how important that is. Then I think last week I made mention I didn't say it, but I gave the Protestant, so-called Protestant view, of which we are not a Protestant church, of course, but it probably makes the most sense that on the first tablet was the first four, and then on the second tablet was the rest of them, 5 through 10. And when you read it, it seems like that's the natural division. But so there's a little difference there. Interestingly enough, Catholicism, how they break it down is they omit the second command, and then they split the tenth into two to make it still 10. And so they have on the first tablet, they have the first commandment, and then 3 through 5, and on the second, 6 through 10b is their breakdown of it. Now, that's not as bad as it seems. You might think, oh, again, that's omitting the second commandment, when you go through it, you find that the first and second commandment are so closely related, they're almost inseparable. In fact, as we look at, you hear us say often that 9 of the 10 commandments are renewed in the New Testament, and that's true. Only the second commandment is to make no graven images, images. But that's never stated in the New Testament directly and specifically. So you say, well, how is it that 9 of the 10? Well, because the New Testament condemns idolatry, and the first two commandments both are dealing with idolatry. But they're so closely related that, we come down hard on Catholicism, and well, we should, this is not something none of this, as you stop and think about it, is overly important. This is just the divisions that different people make, but everybody agrees that the Ten Commandments as a whole deal with duties towards God and duties towards man. And so that's what we see as we get into it. So, and as we look, as we begin to look at this first, the first four, really, and especially the first three, that it really emphasizes the respect that God demands. And you remember it, when we were looking at the introduction to it all, and again, the readiness being prepared, the Israelites being prepared when they went before God, they were going to be in the presence of God. All of that was because of how great and mighty God is. And we should never forget that. And in fact, He doesn't want us to forget that. He's very jealous about that fact, that we always give Him the respect that He deserves. And that was the very purpose, you remember, with the plagues that He set forth that we covered a while back, that he could have taken out Pharaoh right away, but He wanted it drawn out like that so that His glory would be spread throughout the earth, because He wants man to respect Him, and He deserves that. And it ought to be a natural thing, but of course it's not for most. But He deserves respect. And He takes that very seriously. So we see that as we begin looking at these commandments again. Verse 1 says, "And God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery." And then the first command, He says, "You shall have no other gods before me." And as we think about that, now remember who it is He's dealing with. The Israelites, these particular individuals grew up and surrounded by superstitions and idolatry, false gods. And that's what they were used to. And even when they left Egypt, they took some of their false gods with them. And so that's, again, who He's dealing with. It's no coincidence that God begins the Ten Commandments with this one. Because, and not only that, but he knew that they were going into a land that once again they would be surrounded by idolatry. And of course, this generation didn't make it because of their unfaithfulness. We realize that. But that His people from this point forward would be surrounded by idols and superstition. And so this becomes a very, very important commandment. And there's kind of two things involved when you think of this. You shall make for yourself, you shall not make for yourself a carved image. That's the second one, I'm sorry. Verse 3, you shall have no other gods before me. And again, even as I read that second one, you see how it goes hand in hand. That idea of a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. That is obviously a command that is forbidding idolatry. And in this case, the actual making of little gods that they could hold or do whatever and actually worship. And we know that's what individuals did. That's some of the things that they had with them when they left Egypt. Little carved things that were made. And so that now, but it's important to understand that really is what He is condemning with that. It's not just carved things. It's carved things that are going to be worshipped. And so He says at verse 5, "You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God." And so that's important. You know, the question comes up all the time. Well, what about wearing a cross? Should we wear a cross? Well, I don't recommend that. But that's not really what is being condemned here. It's not just a cross. It is, of course, the worshiping of some kind of image. Now, could someone wear a cross and that thing turn into an idol for that person? Yes. Yes. And there are some, and I'm not thoroughly familiar with things like Catholicism, but I've read, it'd have to be substantiated, but I've read where there's little images that they, you might have a cross with Jesus on it that they pray to. And if that were the case, then that would be idolatry, of course. You wouldn't really want a cross with anything on it at all. Like, what would you put on a cross anyway? I mean, God doesn't have a form himself. We worship God is spirit, of course. So I'd put Jesus on the cross. Really, what did he look like? I mean, isn't it always interesting every time you see a picture of Jesus, he looks the same? I remember a long time ago, I had a woman who I worked with. Say she came back from some vacation or something, and you know, it's been years ago, and you know, I can't remember last week. But she claimed that as they were coming, you know, flying home from vacation, she saw in the clouds Jesus. And I can't remember exactly. It seemed like she took a picture or something. But all I remember is when she showed me the picture, you know who it looked like? They're the same Jesus you always see in pictures. A picture that no doubt doesn't look anything like Jesus. Like, why does it everybody sees the same Jesus that doesn't really look like a Jew from the Middle East? But there you have it. Nobody knows. So what are you going to put on the cross? You know, I try my best to avoid, if I'm doing, you know, putting things on our website or whatever, the blog, a picture or whatever, I don't put a picture of Jesus because it's always the same. That's not what Jesus looked like, probably. Like, I can't even be for certain. I can't even tell you that for certain because we don't know what he looked like exactly. And so I would avoid any of that. And you know, but if you have an image on a cross or whatever, and you're praying to that, or even thinking that you're praying through that, that's idolatry. You know. So, but you know, someone you go by and you see a church with a cross on the steeple, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah, I'm not crazy about any of that. But that's not really what this is talking about. It is talking about an image that is carved for the purpose of bowing down and worshiping it. And so commandments 1 and 2 just go hand in hand. He knew that his people were susceptible to that, and that's the kind of thing that he is condemning and wanting them to stay away from. And again, there's two things involved in that. First of all, God is a jealous God. He does not want his people worshiping anyone or anything but him. And he takes that very seriously. Now, we need to take it seriously too. Because we, as we've often pointed out, we're not really susceptible to making carved images or anything like that. But I've always liked what Nelson's Illustrated Dictionary says about it. In fact, I like it so much I have it written in my Bible. And let me just read it. Let me read it for you. This is Nelson's Illustrated Bible Dictionary. And so it's illustrated in that, not that it just has pictures, but it has commentary to it. And in this place, this is what it wrote. Really, basically, it's commentary on Colossians 3 at verse 5. And you remember, anybody remember what Paul said about covetousness? It's idolatry. It's idolatry. And so in view of that particular passage, this Bible dictionary has the following. In the New Testament period, the term idolatry began to be used as an intellectual concept. And that is exactly right. By New Testament times, idolatry involved that it's not that in New Testament times that no one had the little idols. We know they did, the Gentiles particularly. But by and large, and especially with the people of God, it was more intellectual concept. Idolatry became not the bowing down before a statue, but the replacement of God in the mind of the worshiper. Now you need to pay attention to that, because that's what we are susceptible to today. The replacement of God in the mind of the worshiper. Colossians 3:5 points in this direction. Put to death covetousness, which is idolatry. At this point, the modern believer must understand the vicious nature of idolatry. While we may not make or bow down to a statue, we must constantly be on guard that we let nothing come between us and God. And again, that's very important for us to understand. Don't let anything come between you and God. And it closes by saying, as soon as anything does, that is an idol. Now, I'm almost 100% sure that if I went into any of your homes, I would not find an idol on the shelf somewhere that you bow down once in a while in worship. But anything that you replace in your mind, you replace God with in your mind, that becomes an idol to you. Your house can be an idol to you. The car that you drive could be your idol. I know a lot of people who almost worship, if not altogether, their car. Your recreation, whatever form of recreation and entertainment you have, can be an idol to you. Your job can be your idol. Your family can be your idol. That's a big one. I know a lot of individuals in the church who would put their family before God. That's idolatry. But any material thing that you have, money can be your idol. Maybe that's the most common thing. All of these things are idols. You don't bow down, you don't worship them, but they replace God so far as what is more important to you. Even if you don't articulate it or really even get it in your own mind, they become more important to God. You rather please them or yourself. Now, here's the biggest thing. You can be an idol to your own self. In fact, that might be the hardest thing to avoid. There's a passage, I think it's in Philippians. I'm going to turn over there. Did I see a hand go up? Yes, gee. Right, there is none. There is none. So that's why I said earlier that that's a cross within itself there's nothing in the New Testament that says don't do that. Now, again, you can wear a cross and it can become an idol to you. But when I see someone wearing a cross, I don't immediately say, oh, they're committing idolatry. It's nothing more. It's like I wear this little pin from McDonald's, and sometimes someone asks me, some of you, what's that? Well, it belonged to Whitney, and I wear it wherever, whenever I put on a tie. Am I idolatry? Am I work? No. It's not magical. Doesn't bring me luck. Or anything. It's not superstitious or anything like that. It just was hers, so I put it on. No more than that. Some people wear a cross, and some people, it doesn't mean anything. There's a lot of non-religious people that just like the way cross look, and they wear it. Other people do it. They think, you know, it's just a reminder to them of Jesus dying on the whatever their reason. I don't even know. I have never even really had a conversation with someone about it. But a cross all by itself isn't something that is necessarily sinful. But you have to be careful about anything like that. Like, you know, you can also wear a cross just like the Pharisees wore phylactery. Like you think somehow it makes you more holy. And some people will, you know, they will wear even a bigger, more gaudy looking thing. Is it, you know, what is that? Why? But at the end of the day, there's nothing in the New Testament that I could put my finger on and say, see, here, you can't do that. And that's not even really what, even in the Old Testament, that God was condemning. They were actually bowing down and worshiping objects. And so, Right. But it could have been. I mean, it wouldn't have been then. It wouldn't have been then because that, and by the way, people didn't start wearing crosses, even churches, until late. Like can't even remember the dates when the first church started putting crosses in the church buildings. It was like 431 or something like that. And then the first cross on a steeple was like in the 500s somewhat. So, you know, the church really began to become paganized and heading in the wrong direction. And that was even before Catholicism, of course, that you started going in that direction. But the whole point, I don't want to get too bogged down on that. The whole point is, I couldn't tell you, don't you wear a cross. I can't put my finger on the passage to condemn that. I wouldn't do it, but you know, whatever. Yeah, go ahead. Right. 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 I'm not quite sure of that answer. You could trip them up with that. Right. Of course, there's different ways you can trip them up with John 1:1 where they're inconsistent. But I don't know that I've ever asked them. I'm trying to think, that might be one of those things. I do have a position on that. I just can't remember what it is. I'm trying to think in my mind, just conversations that I've had with them. If they believe that it's okay to worship Jesus, and I just can't recall off the top of my head what they do with that. Yeah. Yeah. Paul. That's idolatry. Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's definitely idolatry. Now, do they? I truly don't know this. Do they make images of Mary? Do they have image? They do. Yeah.
You know how many statues you can find in a church?
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
There's, like I said, there's a lot. You know, Saint Christopher, Saint Paul. I mean, they're all saints. You know.
Right.
Well,
see, but though, Paul, and I, yeah, that all most of that is idolatry. Now, a statue in itself is not idolatry. It's art. And I don't know the purpose of why people do what they do and put in church buildings, but it wouldn't necessarily be. But the moment you try to pray through an object or worship it in any form or fashion, then it's idolatry. And so, yeah, Jake. Right. So how do you even go about doing that? How do you go about making art? Like, it's one thing if you have a statue of a saint. And, you know, again, you know, I would avoid any and all of that. But how are you going to make a statue of God? He's spirit, anyway. But even Jesus, we know he took on a physical body, but and enough people make statues of Jesus all the time. What does it look like? Right. I mean, he said it, not me, but that's exactly right. What he looked like. And probably not like a Jew from the Middle East. But, so all of that. And so, I mean, that's a good passage, you know, to look at there. You just wouldn't do that. Now, I don't know that a passage like that, again, I stay away from it, but would that passage necessarily condemn a cross all by itself? I don't know. It'd be hard to go to that length with that passage. It's, you know, it just all depends, and really it depends on the individual. How are you viewing that cross? How do I view this? You know, whatever. You can worship anything, and that's the point. Everyone stay away from all kinds of idolatry. But more to the point, most of us, you know, you don't see, and particularly in churches of Christ, I do once in a while see brethren wearing a cross. You know, I say, interesting, and don't say anything about it or whatever. But the far greater issue are the things that I just finished talking about. Things that we in real life put before God, including ourselves. There's a passage in Philippians. I started to look for it, and I believe it's here. It might be in Colossians, but I think it's Philippians. Let me look at it real fast. Philippians. Philippians 3, verse 17. Paul writes this. Philippians 3 at verse 17. It says, brothers, join in imitating me. Keep your eyes on those who walk according to the example you have in us. For many of whom I have often told you and now tell you, even with tears, walk as enemies of the cross. And so now the cross of Christ. So he says, I'm writing to you with tears. So who is he writing about? Who are these enemies of the cross of Christ? Not specifically, but in general, who are they? Well, no. I mean, might have been. Anyway, the church, Christians, or so-called, right? Children of God, at least, we'll say. They were members of the church. That's why he was writing these things with tears. It disappointed him greatly. And so he's describing those who are members of the church here. And he says about them, their end is destruction. Now watch this. Their God is their belly. And you know, in New Testament times, that was the belly. It just represents the inner man. And sometimes different terms are used, you know, whatever, when they viewed the belly, the bowels, anything. The inner man was the seat of all affections and emotions, is what it stood for. So when Paul said that their God is their belly, he was saying that they were worshiping their own desires, their own affections. That became more important to them than God. That became their God. That's a problem, but it's not a rare problem. That's something we have to fight against every day, that you don't put you before God. The moment you do that, you're an idolater. Don't bow down to an image, but you're an idolater. When you become more important, you put your own wants, your own wishes, your own affections before God, your belly has become your God. Now, all those other things, again, are real. We have to fight against that. Don't worship your car. Don't even put it before God. Your job, how many people put their job before God? Family's a big one. How many people put family before God? That's idolatry. But the hardest one to avoid is you, me, putting ourselves, what we want, before God. But that's idolatry. That's why Nelson's Illustrated Bible Dictionary, it's different today. It's now turned into an intellectual concept. It is now not a statue you bow down to, but anything that replaces God in your mind, that's your idol. So are these commandments, the Ten Commandments, these first two commandments, are they still important? Yes, there's still a moral principle behind. No, we're not under the law of Moses, but the New Testament condemns idolatry just like those Ten Commandments did. And we better be careful that God is first, which is something else, really. You know, the way the commandment is even stated, don't have any other gods before me. The emphasis really is on, I want to be first in your life. And God knew that all the idols were dead and not real. And he condemned the idolatry, the bowing down, all of that. But God wants to be first before everything and everybody else in our life. Matthew 6, verse 33, you know it as well as I do. Seek ye first the kingdom of God in his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. But that's a command. Seek God first. And the moment that doesn't happen, the moment you're not doing that, there's a problem. There's the problem of idolatry. Something has taken God's place in your mind. And, that's not a hard thing to do. Better be careful. I better be careful that we're putting God first. And you notice what he says here. Again, he emphasized this. I'm a jealous God. That word jealous there, just, the idea of having zeal for something. And God was zealous, not only for his people. He loved his people. He didn't want to share his people with anybody, anything else, but also for his own respect and reverence. He demanded that. So much so that he says, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing their steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. Now, when he says they're visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation, what do you think he's not saying? What do you think he's not saying? Huh? Yeah, he's not going to condemn their children for their sins, are they? Or is he? I mean, there's many passages that... Someone read Deuteronomy 24, verse 16. Read that for me. Deuteronomy 24, verse 16. And this same thing is stated in many different places, but here's one of them. Deuteronomy 24, verse 16. Right. There. Now, of course, obviously, that condemns Calvinism, but that's a biblical principle stated several times. God is just he's a just God. He's not going to do that. And so, but our children and even our children's children sometimes can suffer the consequences of our sins. And we see that all the time. You see that even with idolatry, really. You think about Romans chapter 1 when Paul condemned the Gentiles and he condemned them, you remember, because they would not retain God in their knowledge. And instead they began making idols. The birds and creeping things even, and worshiping those things. And they, Paul, the way Paul put it, they thought they were so wise. Why did they think they were wise? If you create your own gods, then what can you do? Make up your own rules. Because gods have to be in charge. But idols are dumb idols. They're not alive, and so what do? Well, you attribute them rules and regulations. And of course, if you created them, you're going to give them the rules and regulations you want to live by. Oh, that's genius. Oh, we're that's smart. We're wise. Paul said, no, you're fools. Well, but the point of it is, in Paul's day, now, that happened a long time ago, where people dismissed God from their minds. And then, generation passes and and then all of a sudden there are many people who are born into that. They're born into homes where there's idolatry. That's the consequences of their parents' sin. That's true in every walk of life. You have a child, you're an alcoholic. What might happen to your child? You say, well, that God's going to condemn that child for being an alcoholic or a drug abuser. No. But that child might suffer. And then sometimes because of influence, and this is really the case here in this passage, because of influence, you follow in the steps of your fathers, your parents. See? And then your parents are, not 100%, obviously, but share in having a negative influence upon you, but now you're condemned because of the influence of your parents. And so go back over to this passage in Exodus and read this again and notice how it reads. Visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third, fourth generations of those who hate me. And so you have people growing up hating God because that's what they were taught in the home. And look at the very next verse in contrast to that. But showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. See, the same thing. The first part there is the opposite of the second part. God shows love to those who keep his commandments. But he condemns those that hate him. And sometimes it's a cycle. And so generation after generation. But all of this show, God is just warning them. This is the way it's going to be. And I'm never going to tolerate it because I'm a jealous God. And I want to be first. And I want to be only. And that's the way it has to be. And it has to be in our lives too. So these, you know, you don't want to dismiss these just 10 commandments. They're not important. It's been nailed to the cross. Well, no. The Bible continues to condemn idolatry, even though it's a little different today. It's still real. Even though you don't bow down to a statue, it's still real. And so you have to keep that in mind. Now, the next one, I think that was the second bell, wasn't it? Ye shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. There's a little bit to say about that. I'll make mention on the different ways we can do that next week.